All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Let's begin. So in this segment of our shiur this morning, we spoke a little bit about, or a lot about, parents, I should say parents and children, focusing much more on the chinuch of younger children. And I guess in this these two afternoon sessions, we'll focus a little bit more on children dealing with parents, more specifically with some of the more complicated issues regarding the sandwich generation and the challenges that sometimes come up with dealing with elderly parents. So I want to use this shiur a little bit as a springboard, kind of giving a little bit of background. There's a lot to talk about in the halachos of kibud av va'em, in the halachos of honoring parents. I'm not really going to get too into the mechanistic details regarding kibud av va'em right now, but just a little bit of background. So, of course, the interesting question that comes up most often when it comes to the mitzvah of kibud av va'em is, why is there no bracha? And the truth is, I'm choosing to spend a little bit of time on this because this gives us a little bit of an insight into the complexity of the mitzvah. So, for example, one of the people who tackles this in a very comprehensive way is the Rashba, Rav Shlomo ben Aderet, Barcelona, 1235 to 1310. And he has a whole discussion, Lama in mavarchen al mitzvahs kibud av va'em. So he says, he doesn't just put in kibud av va'em, he actually includes a number of mitzvos in this particular question, and discusses ultimately, again, why is it that some mitzvahs get a bracha, why is it that some mitzvahs don't get a bracha, but we'll focus a bit more on, when it comes to honoring parents, why is there no bracha? So he gives a variety of different answers, but on a most basic level, he says as follows. I'm going to quote you. He says, V'chein, ein mevarchin al mitzvah she'ina teluya kula biyat ha'osef. One does not make a bracha on something that you yourself cannot wholly, fully, and totally control. This is actually an interesting idea. So when do you make a bracha on a mitzvah? When it's biyadcha lekaimo. When you control the fulfillment of that mitzvah, that's when you make a bracha on it. So I can make a bracha before I put on my tefillin because I control the fulfillment of that mitzvah. I can make a bracha before I light the Neiros Chanukah because I control that bracha. But on a mitzvah that I don't control the fulfillment of, then at the end of the day, you cannot make a bracha on that mitzvah. Mipnei, she'efshar shlo yisratze b'chaveiro, b'nimtza ma'asa misbato. Because at the end of the day, when the mitzvah is dependent on someone else, the other person may not be a willing participant in the mitzvah, and therefore, again, I cannot make a bracha. So, for example, the paradigmatic example of this is actually not kibud av va'em. The paradigmatic example of this is tzedakah. Right, tzedakah, why is it there's no bracha before I do the mitzvah of tzedakah? Because on a most basic level, the recipient could say, no thank you. Right, the recipient could say, it's okay. The recipient could say, I'm not interested. And therefore, what happens if the recipient says, I don't want it? What's the halacha? So I certainly get, you know, points with HaKadosh Baruch Hu because I tried, I definitely put in the effort, but at the end of the day, I did not go ahead and fulfill the mitzvah. So the Rashba says the same logic applies to kibud av va'im as well. There's an interesting halacha in Shulchan Aruch. And the halacha says, this is in Yaradeya, Simin Reish Mem Sif Yutes, Ha'av Shemachol al Kivodo, Kivodo Machol. If a parent chooses to forego the honor that is coming to them, ultimately, their covet is machol. They're right. Meaning the honor as a parent that I have that my children owe me is something that belongs to me. If I choose to say it's okay, then ultimately, again, I as a child am exempt. So because my parents could choose to forego their honor, therefore I can't make a bracha on the mitzvah of kibud av va'em. I'll give you about an interesting illustration of this. And like, for example, I don't know if we might get to this maybe a little bit in the second shiur regarding some of the halachos concerning honoring parents even after death. So for example, according to many of the Rishonim, the concept of Yud Beis Chodesh, right, the concept of the fact that mourning applies for 12 months after the loss of a parent is a din in kibud av va'em. That's one of the ways you honor our parents. What happens if a parent tells their child while they're alive, I'm mochel on the Yud Beis Chodesh. I'm mochel on it. I don't need you to be in mourning for 12 months, right? Shloshim is more than enough, or not even Shloshim, maybe even Shloshim, they don't have to, but let's assume Shloshim, right? I'm mochel on the 12 months. So what's the halacha in such a situation? Technically speaking, the child would not be obligated to mourn for the additional 11 months. on a technical level. Now, there are other complications in that, like in terms of maris ayin, in terms of how that looks, klap echot, how that looks on the outside, other people not understanding, a potential show of disrespect towards a parent. But I'm just putting it on a very technical level. If a parent were to say, I do not need you to mourn for 11 months after I pass away, then at the end of the day, the child, so why am I pointing this out to you? I'm pointing this out because although the Rashba is giving a technical answer, that we do not make a bracha on kibud av ve'em, because at the end of the day, it's not biyadi l'kayma. I don't have the ability to fulfill it on my own, but it's dependent on others. And you never make a bracha that is dependent on others for its fulfillment. I think this also highlights the complexity of kibud av ve'em, that the fulfillment of this mitzvah is not only in my hands. The fulfillment of this mitzvah rests in the hands of someone else. And the truth is, this is not unique to Kibud Av Ve'em. This is true with any relationship mitzvah. And part of the complexity of Kibud Av Ve'em is the notion, ultimately, again, that it is not just me, but is based on my interaction with someone else. And all of us know, in relationships, you could have the most wonderful motivations, you could have the most sincere desires, but if the other person is not interested, or the other person has different expectations, or the other person is unhappy with the way you're doing things, then although your motivations may be pure, your approach may be wonderful, the relationship often does not go so well. So just, I've always felt that this is incredible to see. I don't just look at this Rashba as a halachic answer. I look at this as a hashkafic statement about the complexity of kibud av ve'em. I can't make a bracha because I may not be able to fulfill the mitzvah. Why won't I be able to fulfill the mitzvah? Not because of me, but why? But why? Because of my parents. My parents may be willing, my parents may not be willing, my parents may be happy with what I'm doing, may not be happy with what I'm doing. And this, I think, really highlights the complexity of this mitzvah. Now, there are many mechanistic details of kibud av ve'em. Now, actually, before we get to some of the mechanistic details, I'll show you something else. There's a whole body of halachic literature regarding, actually, Rabbi Winter alluded to some of it in his introductory remarks this morning, about why are we obligated to honor our parents, right? The notion that ultimately, again, kibud av ve'em, as we know, is in the first five, right? Even though, again, it is an first five of the Ten Commandments, even though it is an interpersonal commandment, which would seem to fit better with the other side, the left side of the commandments. So there's much literature written about the nature, what we call the tam ha-mitzvah. But I want to share with you something amazing, which I think is incredibly important for framing the mitzvah in the right way. The Sefer Achinuch writes, this is in Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, Mitzvah number 33, which is the Mitzvah of Kibud Av Ve'em. So the Sefer Achinuch writes, it says, Mishrashe Mitzvah Zu, at the root of this Mitzvah, Sheroi Lo La'adam Sheyakir V'yigamol Chesed, L'misha Asa Imo Tova. So listen to these words very carefully. Sefer Achinuch says, why do I have to honor my parents? And again, the one thing I will tell you is, I'm not getting into the technical details regarding Kibud and Mora. Right, there's two parts to honoring our parents. There's kibud, which generally refers to the positive displays, right? Of, let's say, ma'acheu, ma'ashkeu, giving my parent to eat, giving my parent to drink, making sure they're properly clothed. Right? And then there's mora. Mora are the acts of reverence, standing up when my parent comes into the room, not sitting in my parent's chair, not contradicting my parent's words. That's a tough one for this generation, right? So that's mora, right? That's more like the reverence piece. So we're not really going to spend too much time on that. I'm kind of just looking at everything in an overarching way. So the Sefer Achinuch says something amazing. Why do I have to honor my parents? He says, "Sheroi la'adam shiyakir v'yigmol chesed l'misha ase imotova," because it is important for a person to recognize and to do good with someone who has done good for them. And do not be the kind of person, essentially, who's an ingrate. Why do I have to go ahead and honor my parents? It's hakara satov. It's recognition of the good they have done for me. Because to not honor my parents, says the Sefer Achinuch, is being an ingrate. And remember again, the worst possible character trait that one can possess is lacking gratitude. No one likes people who lack gratitude. The first thing we teach our children when they're young is to say, thank you. Why? Because gratitude is the most basic expression of one's humanity and a recognition of the humanity of the other. Therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, to not respect the people who brought you into this world, by definition, is a fundamental lack of gratitude. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch goes on something amazing. He says, and this is really profound and will frame the rest of our discussion, so remember that my parents are the reason I'm in this world. Like the Gemara says, Shlosha Shutfin Ba'adam, there are three partners in the creation of man, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a mother and a father. And therefore, again, I really should do anything and everything in my power to be good to my parents. Kihem Hevi'ihu La'olam. Because they have brought me into this world. Listen to this phrase. Gam Yogu Bo Kama Yigios Bekatnuso. And they also did a lot for me when I was little. You know, so I'll tell you what's profound about this wording of the Sefer HaChinuch. If you notice, by the way, and you don't have the text in front of you, but you'll look it up, it's Mitzvah Lamed Gimel. The Gam Yogu Bo Kama Yigios, because they also did a lot for me when I was little, in the wording of the Sefer HaChinuch, is an add-on. The honor I give, I owe to my parents, says the Sefer HaChinuch, does not have to do with what they have done for me. This is an incredible, incredible idea. You see, the Sefer HaChinuch says, the honor I owe to my parents is based on what? Based on what? They brought me into this world. They gave me life. Period. Period. An add-on, they also took care of me when I was young. They also changed my diaper. They also put a roof over my head. They also gave me food. That, says the Sefer HaChinuch, is an add-on. Is an add-on. Now, why is this incredibly profound that the Sefer HaChinuch crisis is an add-on? Why? You know, where is this going to come up? I'm sorry? If they didn't, right? Not all parents are good parents. Not all parents are good parents. And sometimes parents are really not good parents. We'll get into some of those situations. The Sefer HaChinuch seems to understand that even if my parents did not do good by me, again, that's different than wronging me. We're going to discuss wronging, and we'll get into that. But right now, the Sefer HaChinuch says, the ikar obligation I have for kibud av va'im is fundamentally rooted in the idea of hakaras hatov, of gratitude. They gave me life. I would not be here without my parents. And because of that, therefore, I owe them hakaras hatov. I owe them gratitude. By the way, they also happen to have taken care of me when I was young. But even if for some reason that didn't happen, the obligation ultimately, again, for honor would be there. So this is incredibly important because a lot of times we think that kibud av va'im is a din in basic reciprocity. In other words, if my parents were good to me, I have an obligation to be good to them. If they weren't good to me, however we define that, I don't have an obligation to be good to them. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that is not correct. The obligation of kibud av va'im stems from the fact that they gave me life. If they happen to be good parents, in addition, that's biblical gravy, right? That's fantastic. That adds on to the mitzvah, right? But at the end of the day, even if they were not such great parents, again, I'm going to distinguish between parents who are not so great versus parents who are bad. Those are two different things which we will get into. But assuming we're dealing with the not so great, says the Sefer HaChinuch, there'll still be an obligation ultimately to go ahead and give them kavod. So what the Sefer HaChinuch is really telling us is something very profound. The most important attribute that a Jew has is hakaras hatov, is gratitude. That is the most basic, fundamental character trait that we must ingrain within ourselves, because it is the fundamental underpinning to a meaningful and sustaining relationship with God. Because at the end of the day, why do I feel tethered to God? Why do I feel tethered to Kadosh Baruch Hu? Because I feel a profound sense of gratitude. Look at everything that God has given to me. If you're not a person who feels gratitude, there is no relationship with God. And if you can't feel a basic sense of gratitude to the people who gave you physical life, there is no way that you will feel gratitude towards the person, or towards the entity, excuse me, who gave you your neshama, who gave you everything else. So Sefer HaChinuch really understands. Yes?
So that's really related to what you said before, about teaching children how to say thank you. You're teaching them godliness.
100%. And again, this, by the way, this theme, this is why Jews are known as Yehudim. The Sfarno points this out, right? Yehuda was a Shevet. Why are we known as Yehudim, right? So it could, historically, it could be because Yehuda was the Shevet that remained intact. But even before that, we're known as Yehudim. Why? So the Sfarno explains. Because ultimately, again, Yehuda is Leah Yemenu saying, Hapam Odas Hashem. It was Leah Yemenu saying, thank you. You know, there's an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says that Leah Yemenu was the first person to say thank you to Hashem. Sort of Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, asks, really? Leah was the first person to say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Noach didn't say thank you when he got off of that fashtunk in the Teva, right? After all those days, he said, thank you, God, for getting me out of this. Avraham Avinu didn't say thank you when he was saved from the Kivshanesh, from the fiery furnace. Yitzchak didn't say thank you after the Akedah. Leah was the first person. So Schwab says so beautifully, he says that Leah was the first person to say thank you for something that occurred in the natural order of the world. Plenty of people had thanked God beforehand, ultimately, again, for supernatural events. Leah was the first person to see the godliness, ultimately, again, even in the day-to-day activities. So taking that, we're called Yehudim. Why? Because that midah of hodah, of gratitude, is a core part of who we are. It's a core fixture in our personal, interpersonal relationships, and it has to be a core fixture in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, that's what Kippur HaFa'im is. It's not really about who my parent is and who my parent isn't. And it's not really even about if I like my parent that much. Or a lot of times people don't always like their parents, right? Now again, we're gonna talk about abusive parents, and we're gonna talk about negative relationships. That's not what I'm talking about over here. I'm talking about situations where at the end of the day, sometimes people are just parav on their parents. They're just parav on their parents, either because of me or because my parents just weren't so good, whatever it might be. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's fine, but respecting your parents, honoring your parents is not your, you know. It's not the pshat that like how I honor my parents is my performance review of my parents, right? You guys did great. So because of that, I'm going to get you a cup of tea. I'm going to help you. You know, I'm going to visit you when you're sick. I'm going to do this, right? So that's your performance review. But if you weren't so good, I'm only going to bring a cup of tea, not do the other stuff. No. Respecting my parents is the way I cultivate within myself a basic sense of gratitude. Even if you weren't such great parents, I'm still going to go and be there for you. Yes? Correct.
Suppose one or both of the parents did not want the child to come to the world. That doesn't figure in on it?
No. At the end of the day, they gave you life. They gave you life.
Even if it was a mistake.
Even if it was a mistake, and even if, chas v'shalom, the parent has told that to the child, yes. Yes, at the end of the day, they gave you life. Because again, I'm here, because you brought me. You wanted, you didn't want it, you had it in mind, you didn't have in mind. You know, you wanted a girl instead of me. You know, whatever it is, at the end of the day. And again, this is the beauty of the Sefer HaChinuch. What he's doing is, he's almost removing the mitzvah from the personalistic context. He's removing this from my personal relationship with my parents and making this about something just much more global. This is actually not simply about, I love you, you love me, you took care of me when I was going to take care of you now when you're old. This is about me needing to be a person who is in possession of the need of gratitude, and you, my parents, are the most basic vehicles through which I refine that incredible midah. Yes? Oh, we're going to get to adopted children in Mirat Hashem. We're going to talk about that. Good. Excellent question. I will tell you the simple answer. You mean in terms of birth parents or adopted parents? Oh, so the simple answer to that is, you know, the Gemara already says that Kol HaMelamed, right? Any, the Gemara says you teach someone Torah, Kilu Holido. It's as if you've birthed them. So amazingly enough, we see that interestingly enough in Judaism, there is a clear concept of paternity without biology. So if you go ahead and you take a child and you raise them and you give them of yourself and you give them life, then absolutely that child has halachos and obligations towards you. Now, some yes, some no. According to many opinions, that child may not be obligated to sit shiva for that parent, although that child absolutely can do that. There may not be a halachic obligation, but it's certainly in terms of kibbut avvaim, using the Sefer Achinuch's idea, even though these parents did not bring me into this world, these parents essentially are the ones who gave me life. If they gave me life or a life, then at the end of the day, I would be chayav and kibbut avvaim. Absolutely. But we're going to come back when we speak about children who are abandoned vis-a-vis their birth parents, which is actually much more complicated. Towards the adopted parents is actually much easier, because it's clear that although these people did not biologically bring me into this world, they gave everything for me. The shaila is in my birth parents. What happens? Well, we're going to come to that. So kind of moving forward a little bit, let's talk about, before we get to that, just a couple of halachic interesting ideas. Step-parents. What is the halacha concerning step-parents in halacha? Is there a chiyuv of kibbut avvaim? There's an amazing gemara. The Gemara Maseches Ksuvos writes as follows. The Gemara says, this is Daf Kuf Gimel Mudal, page 103a. The Gemara says, B'shas Petiras El Shel Rebbe. When Rebbe was dying, Amar Libnai Anitzar, he summoned in his children. Nichnisu Banav Etzlo, his children came in. Amar Lahem, Hizaru B'Kvod Imchem. So Rebbe commands his children on his deathbed, make sure to honor your mother even after my death. So the Gemara says, why does Rebbe need to tell his kids to honor their mother? After all, why does Rebbe have to go and tell him, make sure to treat your mother nicely, even when I die? They're biblically obligated to do so. So the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says, Eishes Av Havi, because the woman who Rebbe was married to at this time was not the biological mother of his children. Rebbe's first wife, the mother of his children, had passed away, and the woman who he was currently married to now was their stepmother. So Rebbe goes ahead, and Rebbe tells his children that when I pass away, I want you to honor your stepmother. Which is interesting, because what does that tell us? So the Gemara says, but still, interestingly enough, based on the pasuk, or based on the phrase, es avicha, kabit es avicha ve'es imecha, S, without getting too technical here, but S is always a phrase that adds on something. So the Gemara understands that S comes to include step-parents also, meaning I'm obligated not only to respect my biological parent, but also to respect the spouse of my biological parent. To which the Gemara says, that's true when my parent is alive. But once my parent is no longer alive, there is no obligation of kavod to the step-parent. Now again, before we explain this, I just want to clarify something. When we say there is no obligation of kavod to the step-parent, when the biological parent passes away, that doesn't mean that you could disrespect the step-parent. It just means, remember, kibbut avvaim has certain halachic obligations attached to it. But what it means is, I'm not obligated in kavod once the biological parent passes away. Now, what's the logic behind this? So the Rambam writes as follows. The Rambam says, "Chayiv Adam lechabed as Eishes Aviv, afa pisheinu imo." A man is obligated to give kavod, to give honor to the wife of his father, even though she is not his biological mother. Why? Shezeh bichlal kibud aviv. So this is actually very interesting. Why am I obligated to honor my parent's spouse, even if this person ultimately, again, is not my parent? Why? Because if I disrespect my stepmother, who am I effectively disrespecting? My father. Therefore, I must honor my father's spouse as a form of honoring my father. That's the idea of respecting. So therefore, again, logic would dictate that what's halacha? Therefore, once the father passes away, am I obligated anymore to respect his spouse? The answer would seem to be no. Because the only obligation, the only reason I'm obligated in the step-parent to begin with is because it's the spouse of my parent. Once the parent passes away, then at the end of the day, I'm no longer obligated. After the biological parent passes away, there is no obligation of kavod towards the step-parent. Now that's the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch codifies this a bit differently. And the Shulchan Aruch says something amazing. He quotes the Rambam, right? When the biological parent is alive, there's an obligation to respect and to honor the step-parent. When the biological parent passes away, there's no longer a technical obligation, but the Shulchan Aruch adds on something very interesting. He says, "Umikomakom davar hagun lechabdam af leacher misa." But the Shulchan Aruch adds on an interesting phrase. "Mikomakom nevertheless davar hagun." Davar hagun means it's appropriate. It's a good idea to respect your step-parent even after the natural parent, the biological parent, passes away. So what does that mean? Davar hagun? Is it a halachic obligation? No, it doesn't. It's a halachic obligation, but it sounds like it's proper interpersonal conduct to still honor that person even after they pass away. Yes?
Is this similar to an in-law parent as well?
So no, in-laws are actually going to be different, because in-laws actually have a much stronger status of parents than a step-parent. Yeah, in-laws, we're going to get to in-laws in Mir Tashem also. So this is just an interesting idea. Now again, obviously, a lot of these situations as they come up in life are often fraught with much more challenges and technicality and layers of emotionality that we're not focusing on today, but it is interesting to see that the halacha is kind of clear. When the biological parent is alive, there is a halachic obligation to honor the step-parent. When the biological parent has passed away, the Rambam paskins, there is no longer an obligation to respect the step-parent, to be mechabe the step-parent, but the Shulchan Aruch adds in that phrase, davar hagun. It is the appropriate thing to do. Another interesting issue that comes up, I'll go a little bit out of order. Okay, something that comes up, which is actually interesting, and this is a very broad topic, is what happens when there is a clash between what a child wants and what a parent wants. In other words, I have certain desires and aspirations for my life. My parent does not share those desires and aspirations. And my parent wants me to do something different. So halachic literature is filled with cases like this, but interestingly enough, most of them focus on the same core issue, which is fascinating, which is the issue of living in Eretz Yisrael. Right? So the Shulchan, so there are many. You could go through again. I'm not going to go through them, but I'll give you wonderful Mari Mekomos about this. But this comes up again. So for example, in the Moshe, Ramosha's tshuva about this, the Sakhar Chai Rebbe has a tshuva about this, the Mabit has a tshuva about this. So the reason why this is not always a good kind of test balloon for this particular discussion is because it gets into a topic which is not a topic for today at all, which is whether or not living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah or not. Is it a mitzvah chiyuvis? Is it a mitzvah kiyumis? Is it a mitzvah that you're obligated to get up and go? Or is it just if you go, that ultimately again you fulfill mitzvah, but there's no obligation. So the Mabit, I'll just give you a sampling of this. The Mabit writes about the following situation. I'm going to read to you the shaila that he was dealing with. The Mabit, by the way, is Rav Yosef Charani, who was born in Salonika in 1500 and passed away in 1580. So the Mabit deals with the following situation. I'm going to read to you the question. Ruvain, shenodar, shemielo kach vekach, sheyidar bitzvat, v'ata neskaim hadabar, v'aviv v'imo inam manichim oso laleches ladersham. So listen to this guy named Ruvain. I don't know if maybe the identity was changed to protect his true identity. Name was changed. In any event, Ruvain made a neder. If so-and-so happens, whatever the so-and-so is, I'm going to go live in Svat. Wonderful. So the event occurred. He got what he wanted. One problem, his parents do not want him to go. His parents do not want him to go. So the Mabit deals with this whole discussion. So listen to this. So essentially, the Mabit is of the opinion that living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. So because living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah, therefore what? We have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. This is actually very important, which is, if my parents command me to do something that contravenes, that contradicts that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks me to do, so of course I'm obligated to listen to God and not to my parents, right? On a basic level, my parents command me to violate Shabbos, I'm not allowed to listen to them. So the Mabit comes from the perspective that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. So because there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, I am not obligated to respect my parents' wishes in this, and therefore, again, halacha l'maisa, I am permitted to make aliyah go to Eretz Yisrael. So the Shulchan Aruch that it's quoting is, Amar lo aviv lavar al divrei Torah, if my parent tells me to violate Torah law, bein mitzvah saseh, bein mitzvah lo saseh, even just the rabbinic mitzvah, I do not listen to my parents. Now, what's interesting is as follows. The reason I say this is not necessarily a good example is because, like I said before, according to the Mabit, living in Eretz Yisrael is a Torah obligation. So in the Mabit's model, my parents are telling me to do something that contradicts that which God is asking me to do. But what's amazing is, you see this same question that's looked at through the lens of many other halakhic, many other poskim, who don't necessarily see living in Eretz Yisrael as a obligation. They deal with parallel cases that deal with people who want to go to Eretz Yisrael not to live there, but to learn Torah there. Because I feel that the best yeshiva for me is in Eretz Yisrael. Or the best Rebbe for me is in Eretz Yisrael. But my parents don't want me to go. So you begin to see over here, so for example, this is brought down in the base. Yehuda, the idea that when I feel that something is necessary for my own spiritual growth, I am permitted to go ahead and discount the view of my parents. So they're essentially, when you look throughout the poskim, what you begin to see is as follows. If there is something I feel I need to do for my own personal self-actualization, right? And that this approach or this thing I want to do makes sense, objective sense. And it's, quote-unquote, within the spectrum of that which is normal. Although people have different spectrums for normal. But the spectrum of that which is normal, and my parents don't want me to do it, I am not obligated to go ahead and listen to my parents if it impedes my own progress, if it impedes my own self-actualization, or it impedes my own spiritual growth. Now, that the statement I just made is a very, very, very open-ended statement. And I always tell people in these kind of situations, you have to consult, you should ask a shayla on your particular circumstance. Because there are times where ultimately, again, part of the mitzvah of kibud av va'em is that there are times where I do put my own needs on the back burner in order to go ahead and take care of a parent. We're going to discuss this more in our next year, in our next segment. We're going to speak much more about caring for elderly parents. That's what we're going to focus. That's going to be exclusive. We'll talk about next time. Hey, so there are many times we're caring for the need of a parent. I'd rather say, you know what? I'd rather not be bothered. I'll not be bothered here. I'll put them somewhere, or you take care of them. I want to go live my life. So that's not what we're talking about over here. That we'll deal with in our next year. What I'm talking about over here is my parents are fine. Thank God they're young, they're vibrant, they're able. I'm not taking care of them. They just like having me close by. I feel that for my own self-actualization, I have to move to Eretz Yisrael, or whatever you fill in the blank, South Africa, England, Australia, whatever it might be. There's a good job opportunity, there's a good this, there's a good that, whatever it might be. And my parents say, I don't want you to go. I'm your parent, I love you, I want you close by, I don't want you to go. So here again, my parent is telling me that they want me close by, but again, for my own self-actualization and my own advancement, not just spiritually, but it could be career-wise as well, am I obligated to listen to my parents? So it appears, based on the poskim, that one can make the cogent argument that I am not obligated to listen to my parents to stay put if that parental command impedes on my own development and self-actualization. Yes? So that from a halachic perspective, your kids are on their own from the age of 9, right? There was a takanas chazal that you should continue to feed your children as long as they're in your house, right? So, but certainly once children grow up and are on their own, I as a parent have no obligations towards them. They have obligations towards me. Now again, you're getting into so those aren't halachic questions. Those are more like practical questions. Do you want to stay close with your family? Right? What's going to be the impact on the family if you move far away or you do this, you do that? But from a halachic perspective, the obligation only goes from children to parents, not from parents to children. That being said, there is one obligation, and we'll get into this more also, which is that parents have an obligation not to be overbearing on children. That is the halachic obligation. Now, there's a story that's told that the stipler, when he was ill, he had one of his daughters was sleeping over at the house, and she was going to sleep, and she said, "Please, she said to her father, please wake me up if you're not feeling well. I wanna." So she goes to sleep. He wakes up the next morning, and the stipler was sicker than he was the night before. So she said to him, "Father, I told you to wake me up. I have a chiyuv of kibarav. I want to help you." So the stapler responded, he says, "You're right, you have a chiyuv of kibarav, you have a chiyuv to honor me, and I have a chiyuv not to be matriach. I have a chiyuv not to go ahead and make things difficult for you." And this, by the way, I guess this wasn't really covered in our topics this morning, but this is an incredibly important idea that although, again, there are many obligations that children have towards parents, parents have an obligation to not be overbearing on their children. That's true when the children are young, and it's true when the children are older. I mean, parents have an obligation to make sure that every parent wants their child to self-actualize to the best of their ability. Just like every parent wants their child to take flight from the nest. I want my child to flap the wings. The problem is sometimes we want our children to only flap their wings within a certain mile radius, right? But at the end of the day, that's not what you want. Sometimes as a parent, I have to put my personal needs, go back to what we spoke about this morning, I have to put my personal needs on the side and recognize that I want my child to be successful and I want my child to be happy, and I never want my own personal wishes to come in the way of my child's own success. So there are no obligations that I have towards my children except not to be overbearing, and sometimes, again, to make sure that I put my needs secondary to their needs, especially when they're young and kind of finding their own way. Yes?
And what if adult child wants to move to Eretz Israel and the parents are sick?
So that we're going to cover that in our next class. In the next year, we're going to focus on caring for elderly, infirmed parents. That's going to be the sole focus of that. So hold on to that to the next class. I'll just share with you just a couple of other interesting ideas just before we run out of time. So there's another interesting piece, which is what about, and this is a much bigger discussion, which probably warrants its own class, which is the chiyuv of kibud av ve'em towards abusive parents. Now, abusive parents, there's a spectrum in that. Obviously, if a parent is physically abusive or sexually abusive, so there it's simpler. The halacha is one is not chayiv in mitzvos towards a person who is a rasha. A parent who is abusive is a rasha. And as a result of that, they might be a rasha because they're ill, they might be a rasha because they might have a variety of different reasons. But a parent who abuses a child has the halachic classification as a rasha. So if that parent is abusive, then there is, of course, absolutely no obligation of kibud. Now, again, I want to be clear, the absence of the mitzvah of kibud does not mean you could disrespect. This is a very, very important idea, because sometimes it's just the concept, ultimately, of removing oneself. So I'm never really permitted to disrespect my parent. I can't really disrespect any human being, my parents or not my parents. But at the end of the day, if the parent, chas v'shalom, does things that are objectively wrong and evil, the parent has the status of rasha, and therefore, again, there is no obligation to be mechabed them. You know, those cases are more extreme. A lot of times what comes up is something a little bit more nuanced, which is what about if the parent has negative behaviors? What I mean is, listen to this incredible Aruch HaShulchan. Aruch HaShulchan writes as follows. He says, So first of all, again, in general, the halacha has an incredible amount written regarding if I see my parent doing something wrong and how to correct a parent, under what circumstances you could correct a parent, how to point out to a parent that maybe they're not doing exactly the best thing. We're not going to get into that now. But listen to what the Aruch HaShulchan says. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, V'meino Rasha. So here's the fun. So again, remember, this sounds strange. If my parent is a rasha, it's much easier. What does that mean? In other words, halachically, it's much easier because I know I'm not obligated in kibud aveim. It's a very simple idea. My parent is talad rasha, I'm not obligated in kibud aveim. What happens if the parent is not a rasha, but instead, rak shemisnahig b'midos ra'os? Parent's not nice. Parent is bad midos. Visanui librios. My parent is, people just dislike my parent. So it's just difficult. It's difficult to just like live with a person like this. It's difficult to be around a person like this. Or, listen to these cases. V'chein im haya shikr. My parent has an alcohol problem. They're not abusive. They're not abusive. They're not hurting me. They're not doing anything wrong. But you know what? There's just like negative stuff that's happening around the house that I don't like. There's stuff that's happening that's not healthy for me. There's stuff that's happening that's not good. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, what can you do? Tov sheyisrachich es atzmo mimenu. Aruch HaShulchan says tov, which means it's good, that you should distance yourself from the parent. And I'm going to end with this, because this really highlights a very, very, very important concept in Kibbutz Aveim. That there are times, and this is kind of going to be our segue for our next class, but there are times when the best way for me to honor my parent is to keep a distance from my parent. Because sometimes the parent is just not a good influence. Sometimes the parent is just not a healthy person. And unfortunately, this comes up. This comes up for all people, and some people are exceptionally difficult. You know where this comes up often? This comes up often that sometimes parents unknowingly, negatively impact the marriages of their children. And so what do you do if within a marriage, one set of parents is having a truly deleterious impact on the marriage of the couple? So again, on the other hand, the couple still has the obligation to be mechabed their parents. The wife has the obligation, the husband has the obligation, the wife has a different kind of obligation, but there's still an obligation that exists. So what do I do under those circumstances? So I've always found that this Aruch HaShulchan is incredibly important and instructive. Because this Aruch HaShulchan says is that you're never permitted to disrespect the parent, but sometimes the way to deal with more turbulent circumstances is what we call to be misalik, to go ahead and remove yourself from the circumstance. If I remove myself, sometimes avoidance is not a way to deal with your problems, and sometimes avoidance is gufa, the way to deal with your own. So sometimes, again, I'm not going to fix people, I'm not going to fix my parents, so if I see that there are some things that are negative. Again, the Aruch HaShulchan's examples are incredibly profound. Negative character traits, drunkenness, doesn't get along with people. Therefore, says the Aruch HaShulchan, at that moment, there might be a conventional wisdom not to totally disconnect, but to withdraw a little bit. Hopefully, if I take a step back, there's less clashing, and if there's less clashing, ultimately, again, I will not come to compromise the honor of my parents. So we'll stop over here with this session. Amir Hashem will pick up the next session, I think, in just a couple of minutes, right? Yeah, in about 10 minutes, Amir Hashem, and we'll focus on... Question?
Oh, yeah, just I'm asking a historical note, because Rabbi Grossman also quoted the Turkish rabbi. Is how far back do the Aliyah questions go, like historically, that we had rabbi?
Written record, I would say probably the 1300s. Oh, and I take that back. We find questions already in the Gemara. What am I saying? The Gemara speaks about, again, whether or not, Gemara Masechet Kesuvos discusses, whether or not, if a man wants to make Aliyah, and the wife does not, is that grounds for divorce?
All the way back
to the Gemara. Yeah. All right, we'll stop over here. Mercy, we'll pick up in a couple of minutes. And again, just to understand, the next session will focus really on dealing with elderly parents and the end-of-life issues associated with that.